The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This week at Macy's, get an extra 20% off with your coupon or Macy's card. That's on top of already great deals, like 25 to 60% off cold weather gear for the whole family, 30 to 60% off select bedding and bath, plus 30% off select small appliances. And Star Rewards members earn on every purchase, except gift cards, services, and fees at Macy's, Macy's Backstage, and Market by Macy's. More at Macy's.com/Star Rewards. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
Hello and welcome to On the Ledge podcast. I'm your host, Jane Perrone, feeling perky now that the crocuses have popped up in my lawn and I don't have to mow it. So that means I can spend more time with my houseplants. We're back with Mark Preston this week, epiphytic cacti expert, and he's telling us all about the other members of the Rypsalidae tribe. That's Lepismium, Hattiora and Rypsalis. And he also answers some of your questions about propagating forest cacti and also growing them from seed. Speaking of which, it's very nearly time for the On the Ledge Sew Along. So I'd love to hear from you about what you want to hear in our On the Ledge Sew Along 2019 launch episode. Do you want to know practical stuff about sowing seed? Ideas about where to get your seed from? What kind of houseplant seeds are easy to grow? Let me know exactly what you'd like me to cover and I can add that to the list. And question of the week is a hunt for a very unusual plant that looks a bit like a butterfly. But without further ado, let's crack on with my interview with Mark to find out more about this incredible family of forest cacti. I began by asking Mark about Rypsalis, those mistletoe-like plants that have become so popular in the last few years. And I wanted to know if the care regime for these plants was the same as the holiday cactus we were talking about in last week's show.
They are, in many ways. One of the problems with them, I guess, is that a number of them will not flower until the plants have got to quite a size. And so finding places for them in a house can be tricky. But if you have somewhere where you can actually let them hang down and just do their thing, then I think they're really nice plants, and I'm very pleased that they've come back into popularity. One of the problems with them is that the naming is often awful. I mean, even with the Schlumberger and Rypsalidopsis, you don't always know what you're getting. But Rypsalis, then if they are labeled at all, they are often wrongly labelled, and so it's very difficult to know what you are going to get unless you are actually seeing the thing and have enough knowledge of it to know whether it's likely to be the right thing or not. But any number of the species are worth growing. There are about 35, 40 species, and most of them are attractive in their own way. Not all of them have big flowers, but many of them make up for that with large numbers of flowers. As I say, you need to choose your species to fit your particular circumstances, I think.
Yeah, that's very true. And I guess that is the problem. If it's not properly labelled and you bring it home and you don't realise that it's going to turn into a monster, then that's when it gets a bit tricky. It is flowering the point at which sometimes you can then better identify these plants once you've seen the flowers? Does that help with identification?
Yes, it does. And even more so, actually, if you can get them to set fruit, the colours of the fruits can be diagnostic as well. You can usually sort of get a rough idea from the stems once they become sufficiently adult and they're left to grow in their own way. One of the problems with commercial plants is that often they are trimmed very heavily a few months before sale, and so you get a mass of young growth, which is totally uncharacteristic of how the plants are going to be when they get bigger. And so it's only once you get them home, you look after them for maybe a year, that they will start to develop the adult stems that allow you to start making a stab at what sort of plant you've got. But even then, yes, there are a number of Rypsalis which you will not be able to distinguish until you see the flowers and, as I say, ideally fruits as well. But that's part of the fun, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very true. Yes, I hope that a lot of people who kind of listen to this podcast get some joy out of taking a plant home from the garden centre that just says foliage plant or something entirely unuseful, and actually get some joy out of the detective process of figuring out what it is, which is, I kind of enjoy. I love it when people send me a plant picture and say, what's this, Jane? Because I know that if I don't know, I've got a band of people who will help me to track it down. So I find that's great fun.
I think so. And trying to work out how to keep it alive long enough to find out what it is another part of it. I mean, as a general rule, one of the attractive features of epiphytic cacti is that they can be propagated relatively straightforwardly by cuttings. And my general approach has always been to try and get at least three or four cuttings of a plant as soon as I can, because then you can start to spread them around. One plant in somewhere a little bit lighter, one in different sort of compost, a bit wetter, one drier, and see which one dies slowest. And then head in that direction, basically, because until you've actually tested it, you will not really know how best to grow it.
I like your style, Mark. That's exactly how I operate as well. Yes, you've got to figure out which one is looking the least miserable and take it from
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Yeah.
We got onto the subject of propagation, which is something that people definitely wanted to know for these plants. Do we treat them like we would do a succulent cutting of any other kind and let them callus over once we've taken some stem cuttings? Is that the rule for these guys?
With the bigger, chunkier ones, you'll probably be able to do that. I'm not sure it's as important with epiphytic cacti. I rather suspect that many of them may well be adapted to dropping off and starting to root immediately in you know, where they are growing. But yes, you can do it. You can callus the bigger ones. The problem with many of the smaller ones is that they don't have a lot of water reserve. So because they are either growing as a delicate thin tracery of stems, or because they have these flat bladed stems, you know, looking like leaves, though obviously they aren't leaves, they are stems, but they don't retain a lot of water reserves within them, and so you can't afford to just leave them lying around. They will wither and die. At the risk of overdoing the promotion of plastic bags, they are a very good way of rooting epiphytic cacti. I tend not to put any of mine into compost now to root. I just wrap them up in a plastic bag with a tiny little bit of squirt of water to stop them drying out, and then I just put them somewhere on a desk and out of direct sun and leave them for a month or two until the roots appear. Then I pot them up, and I find that they suffer that way much less from fungal diseases, which can attack them quite badly if you pop them into compost straight away.
Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, I agree with you. We're all concerned about plastic use, but I don't know about you, but my Ziploc bags that I use for propagation get used many, many, many times.
Absolutely.
I get washed out in soapy water and reused, so I don't feel too bad about that.
No.
Because it's not a one-use situation. But that's really interesting. I've not tried that, and I think that is a brilliant idea for, as you say, getting those roots to form in a nice humid environment, and then they're ready to be potted up once they've got... How long should those roots be before you're looking at potting them up?
It depends on the time of year. If you do it in the spring and summer when the plants are raring to go, it can be a matter of 10 days before you start seeing the root buds appearing at the base of the plant. And as soon as you've got a bit of root growing, then probably that is the time to pot them up, so it can be within a month or so. Over the winter, obviously, it will take a lot longer. I think there is a danger, of course, if you let them get too big, then you stand more chance of messing the roots and knocking them off when you pot it up. So you have to be a bit careful this way round. But they do seem to survive quite well like it in general.
That's really interesting. I did have a listener who commented that she has really struggled to propagate Christmas cactus and Ripsalis, and that she was letting hers callus and dipping it in rooting powder, but that it always withered away for growing roots. So hopefully this will help her to grow these successfully. I guess it's another indication of the fact that different houseplants require different techniques, and you can't, it's not a one size fits all for these guys, is it? I mean, you know, lots of plants now, rooting in water is tremendously popular, but if you've got to sort of try different things for different plants, and each one has their own preference.
Possibly so. I think also I wouldn't want to suggest that there is only one way of doing this. I know people who do things in entirely different ways. You can root things in just pumice or perlite and vermiculite, totally inorganic bases can both be used for propagation and indeed for growing these things, even though they are entirely unnatural in terms of what these plants would have experienced in the wild. But there's no one way of doing it that's right. It's whatever works for you. And one of the problems with trying to tell people about this sort of thing is that you can't say what is best. You can simply say what works for you. And what works for somebody else might be entirely different.
I guess that's the thing with gardening, that, you know, there's lots of science which we should obviously pay attention to. But at the same time, we're each doing our own individual things in our own individual settings. So we can't always apply the same principles.
Everybody's conditions are going to be different, particularly if you're doing it at home on a small scale. If you're doing a commercial propagation seminar or something like that, it would be entirely different. A couple of things, though, that are worth pointing out about this, one of which, of course, you will know, which is that if you are using scissors or a knife, do be careful to try and sterilize it between different, when taking cuttings of different plants, because one of the downsides of a plant which can be vegetatively propagated quite simply is that they're often quite old plants, and they could over time have developed some sort of viral load which could be passed on to another plant, and that is something that everybody should be aware of and try and reduce the risk of that. One way of doing that, of course, is not to use knives or scissors at all. With the Christmas and Easter cacti, for example, or other types of epiphytic cacti that grow as short stem sections, you can often just twist off those stem sections by hand. And if you can do that, then you are not passing on any viruses from other plants, so you're not at risk of making your plants suffer in that way. The other thing, though, that shouldn't be overlooked is growing from seed, which is great fun. I mean, I'm a sucker for growing things from seed, I have to say. I just love watching them grow. And it is fairly easy to get most of these things to grow from seed. With the species, most of them will come fairly true. With the hybrids, like the Christmas cacti and the autumn flowering Thanksgiving cactuses, you'll find an enormous variety of seed colours and shapes coming out of the seeds. But that, so you won't necessarily get them coming true, but that will, on the other hand, give you enormous possibilities for plants in different colours, different shapes that you might want to grow on.
Well, it's good to hear that, because at the end of this month, beginning of next month, in probably start of March, we will be kicking off our On the Ledge sew along, where we try I try and my listeners try to grow houseplants from seed. And I'm always impressed and amazed by the range of things that people try growing. And so I'm hoping that we'll get some epiphytic cacti in there into the mix, and we'll see some interesting experiments along those lines. How easy are the seeds to get hold of, though? I don't know if I saw any epiphytic cacti on the BCSS list this year, but are they easy to source?
I do know of people who do collect seed from their plants and make them available through the BCSS list, but they are not common. And I don't, supposedly, they are not very, their viability is short. They don't last long. So they have to be sown quite quickly, which might also make this more difficult. Personally, I'm not sure I have tried growing things that way. My own plants, though, do quite often set seed. And so a lot of my experimenting with these things have been with my own plants. The Schlumbergeras and the Hatioras, certainly the Schlumbergeras are not self-fertile. The species we've been talking about are not self-fertile. They need a second plant to cross-pollinate them. And that, of course, is one of the reasons why the progeny can be so varied. But if you've got two Christmas cacti, autumn flowering cacti, there's a fair chance that they will set seed, or you can encourage them by just putting the flowers up against each other and wiggling them around a bit just to transfer the pollen. And in each seed pod, you will get maybe 150, 250 seeds. The problem is what you do with them all when they start to grow.
Indeed. Well, that is the moment where you have to find lots of friends who want to start getting into cacti of various kinds.
Exactly.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This week at Macy's, get an extra 20% off with your coupon or Macy's card. That's on top of already great deals, like 25 to 60% off cold weather gear for the whole family, 30 to 60% off select bedding and bath, plus 30% off select small appliances. And Star Rewards members earn on every purchase, except gift cards, services, and fees at Macy's, Macy's Backstage, and Market by Macy's. More at Macy's.com/StarRewards. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
Question of the week this week comes from Alexander, who has been caught up in the frenzy surrounding a plant that you often see in those "you won't believe this amazing plant" links that you sometimes find on the interwebs. It's called Christia obcordata, but you might see it more often referred to as the butterfly plant. And looking at photos of it, it's not hard to tell why. It has these incredible butterfly-shaped leaves with red markings arranged in such a way that it really does look like a butterfly. And the papery leaves do move in the breeze and make a lovely butterfly wing effect. So it's easy to understand why this plant has captivated many people. Trouble is, though, it's actually very, very hard to get hold of. And this was Alexander's question. He's been searching everywhere in the US for this plant, all the obvious places from Etsy to Amazon, and he hasn't come up with a single lead on how to get hold of this plant. So he came to On The Ledge podcast for advice. Well, Alexander, I'm not sure I can offer you that much help. I did put your query out onto the Twitterverse, and I did get some responses. Some people suggesting a couple of sellers on eBay.com. I personally wouldn't go down this route because both of those sellers were based in Thailand and I think one was in China. The reason why I wouldn't go with those is that very, very often those seeds are not what they say they are. The particular seller had only sold about 17 packets of seed, which doesn't really give much of a chance for feedback to build up. I would be very wary of sending money that way when you're not absolutely sure that you're going to be getting the real thing. That said, There is one much more reliable source of seed in the US that I know of. Top Tropicals in the US has had this plant in stock as seed, although it is not currently in stock. Thanks to Mike Clifford, former guest of the show, who's a UK-based tropical plant nut, for pointing that out. So if I were you, Alexander, I'd get in touch with Top Tropicals and see if they can put you on a waiting list for some seed when this plant becomes available. Do let me know, listeners, if any of you know where to get hold of this plant, or indeed if you've had success growing it. It is, by all accounts, a little bit tricksy. It likes high heat and high humidity. That's because it comes from places like Taiwan and Japan. The stems and leaves are very thin, so it does need that high humidity. And it might be something that you struggle to keep alive unless you have a nice humid conservatory. Always worth a try. It's such a gorgeous plant that if I could get my hands on one, sure, I'd definitely be trying to grow it. A couple of interesting asides about this plant. According to the Useful Tropical Plants website, this plant is used as a cover crop in Japan. It's actually a member of the legume family, so it's nitrogen fixing. The roots have nodules on them, which are able to fix nitrogen from the air, which is a very handy thing for plants to be able to do. So it's used in Japan as a way of increasing soil nutrition. And also, just to say, it's not related to Oxalis triangularis, which it does look a little bit like, just in case you're wondering if they were in some way closely related. They're not. But I wish that Chrysia obcordata was as easily obtained as Oxalis triangularis, but not at the moment. But I'm hoping that you guys will be able to lead us in the right direction of getting hold of some of these plants. So do offer us your top tips. If you've got a question for On the Ledge, do let me know. ontheledgepodcast@gmail.com is how to get in touch. And now back to my chat with Mark, part two. Let's talk a little bit about the two other genera, to use the correct mm-hmm. word, that we haven't already discussed, the Lepismiums and the Hatiora. These I know very little about, other than I love that some of the common names of some of these plants are incredible. When I was just doing some Googling this morning, I came across one called, with the common name, which I'm sure somebody's made up, Drunkard's Dream.
Yes, I thought that would be the one you were going to mention.
And I think there's another one called Drunken Bones or Dancing Bones, I think it is, that I came across.
I don't know that. It might be the same thing. But the Hatiora is now a small genus, only two or three species in it. And only one of those is at all common. And that is the one that you just called Drunkard's Dream. And the reason for the name, I think, is because the stem sections are vaguely bottle-shaped. More like a juggler's... what's the word? The things that jugglers use.
I'm going to have to edit this in afterwards. I can't really remember.
Absolutely. No, me neither. But anyway, vaguely bottle-shaped, but thin at one end and then fattening out at the other end. And I think that is... So the Drunkard's Dream is obviously an allusion to lots of bottles on this plant, but it's somewhat fanciful and entirely unnecessary to think of it in those terms. It's just a fairly small, neat plant, very tolerant, actually, of quite a lot of light, quite a lot of cold, quite a lot of neglect, actually, and it rewards you, all being well, every spring with beautiful yellow flowers. There is another species of Hatiora which has brilliant carmine pink flowers, less common. That's called Hatiora herminii. It's less easily obtainable, but it's an absolutely brilliant plant if you can find it. And that tends to have just straight cylindrical stems rather than these so-called bottle-shaped ones.
Oh, that sounds interesting. I like the sound of that. The Lepismiums, I've never seen these for sale anywhere, but perhaps that's just me and my limited options in terms of where I can shop. Tell me about Lepismiums.
Well, about five or six species. You're quite right. They are not... They don't tend to feature prominently in commerce, which is a pity, actually, because they are... quite robust, quite tolerant creatures. There is one which often appears in mixed cactus collections, and that's called Lepismium warmingianum. And the reason why it's more commonly grown perhaps than others is because it is more tolerant of higher light intensities, less watering, and so on. And so people who grow terrestrial cacti often have a dark corner somewhere that they shove this plant in and forget about it for 10 months of the year. And then in the spring, there's those masses of white flowers appear, and they think, oh, that's why we've got it. And then you forget about it again as soon as it finishes flowering. So there's that one. But there are a number of others which are more interesting as epiphytes, I think. There is a species, Lepismium cruciforme, which has been grown for many years, but and it only has small flowers, really, but it's got quite a tolerant plant. But there is a more recent discovery, which is coming into commerce now, I think, called Lepismium floribundum. Now, floribundum, of course, means lots of flowers, and it really does. It's a magnificent thing, about twice the size of Lepismium cruciforme. Flowers maybe two, three centimeters across, pink, flowers all year round, and it's scented as well. I'm looking out of my window into a conservatory where I've got lots of flowers on my plants immediately outside.
Oh, that sounds lovely. One question that somebody wanted to ask about, generally about taking cuttings of these plants, is cuttings going red, taking on a red blush. Is that a sign that it's had too much sun or too much cold? Is there a general diagnosis for that?
When the stems of any epiphytic cactus go red, it generally means that it's been put under some stress. What the stress is not always as easy to tell. It could be just too much light. It could be that it suffered from drought. It can sometimes happen as a result of overwatering. So the actual cause is not as easy to diagnose, but it does mean that if one of your plants has done that, then it's suffered in some way and you need to try and work out why, preferably before it gets any worse.
That's helpful. And you can begin your kind of detective work to figure out what the problem is. As long as you know that there is a problem, that's a good starting point.
I think that's right. But there is a problem with this, which is that these plants are, however you treat them, these plants are in cacti and relatively slow to die. So if, for example, you've overwatered a plant, and its roots have all rotted off, it could be some months before that becomes apparent. So by the time you actually realise that the plant has gone red and is starting to look a bit wilty, the conditions that you're giving it might be entirely different. You have to try and think, what did I do several months back that could be causing this?
Which is why good record keeping is a good thing when it comes to this kind of thing. I have to admit, my record keeping is dire, but I usually rely on my dodgy memory, and then I can't remember what was going on or why I've done a particular thing. But yeah, if you keep a record, I guess that does help you to figure out exactly what was going on.
If you've noted down the right things, the other thing to do, of course, is, like I said, have four cuttings dotted around the place so that if you do kill one, there's a fair chance that another one might be still surviving and you can try again.
Give us all hope here, Mark. Do you still occasionally kill things and think, darn, what have I done wrong here? Are there still casualties in your collection?
Oh, always. Yes, I can't stop experimenting. I mean, even if the poor things are doing their best, I keep thinking, what if, and trying something slightly different. And I'm permanently killing things. Also, some new things that I get, I really don't necessarily get the hang of how to do it quickly enough. And there are some where I have to sort of start again from scratch. But there are also some which simply do not like my conditions. And after I've tried two or three times, if exactly the same thing has happened every time, then basically I think, you know, it's not doing me or the plant any good to try and prolong our relationship. And so I just admit that these are perhaps ones that I'm not going to be able to do.
Very wise, very wise. And Mark, you give talks about epiphytic cacti. Are there any sort of very common questions at that bit of the end where everyone kind of wakes up and decides to ask you a question? Well, perhaps that's just my talks. Are there any really common questions that come up over and over again when you talk to people about these plants?
I would hope that that over the course of the talk I'd manage to sort of either answer or fend off many of the questions that would crop up. But the ones that always comes up, well, certainly with the Schlumberger, when I'm talking about Schlumbergers, is always the question of timing, so which we've discussed ourselves a few minutes back. So really, it's not, there isn't any sort of extra question which suddenly pops into people's heads at the end. It's more just a question of trying to explain to them to try and get an understanding of how these plants are growing in nature, and then trying to mimic that. And so the whole of my talks are really designed to try and get people into that mindset as quickly as possible, rather than try and tell them individual facts. I prefer to try and get them to understand or to get an impression of how they should be trying to grow these plants, because I think that's ultimately what everyone should be trying to do with houseplants, is trying to understand how they will be happiest rather than force them into some other way of growing.
Well, I've certainly learnt a lot from our conversation, Mark, and I'm going to go inside and just check all my cacti and see if they need a bit of a tweak, because I think certainly there's a few lessons I can learn from what you said today. So thank you so much for joining me today, Mark.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That just about wraps up this week's show. But before I go, I want to raise a big thank you to my new Ledge End this week. Thank you, Emma, for supporting On The Ledge with a donation that unlocks extra content for you and helps support the show. And thanks to Laura, who gave a one-off donation via ko-fi.com. If you want to become a donor too, check out the show notes to find out how. I'll be back next Friday with more chat about your favourite houseplants, from the aloe vera to the double Z plant. Take care, folks. Bye! The music you heard in this week's episode was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops, An Instrument the Boy Called Happy Day Gakana by Samuel Corwin, and Oh Mallory by Josh Woodward, with ad music by the Heftone Banjo Orchestra, all licensed under Creative Commons. See my website for details.
This week at Macy's, get an extra 20% off with your coupon or Macy's card. That's on top of already great deals, like 25 to 60% off cold weather gear for the whole family, 30 to 60% off select bedding and bath, plus 30% off select small appliances. And Star Rewards members earn on every purchase, except gift cards, services, and fees at Macy's, Macy's Backstage, and Market by Macy's. More at Macy's.com/Star Rewards. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.